Welcome to the podcast To Be Named Later, where we explore the world a conversation at a time. Sit back and enjoy. Here are your hosts, Chris and Kelly.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the podcast To Be Named Later. I guess this free agency period of exploration is over because my co-host Chris is back in the house tonight. Chris, welcome back. How was free agency? I guess you couldn't find a better offer or what?
Yeah, I couldn't find all the suitors that I was hoping for, buddy. So I'm back. Thanks for taking me back, Kelly.
It's a little bit like Aaron Rodgers, isn't it? Not as many suitors as some might think there.
You know, I thought people would be knocking down my door. Nah, it was tough with scheduling a little bit. And, you know, as we've stated, you and I both have other jobs until this podcast starts paying the bills a little better. So, yeah, unfortunate, man, because I love the conversations. From the guests that you bring on, and I'm happy to be back with you, buddy. I'm sorry I missed the last couple.
No worries, man. Always happy we're a team and we got it going on. So as I've said in a couple other episodes, let's jump right in, Chris, because wow, there's a lot going on in sports. I kind of like March is one of those times when it's really all happening. All 365 business of the NFL never stops. Basketball, college and pros going on. Baseball's warming up, and it's just hockey's there too, and a lot more. So it's really kind of a fun time of the year. I don't know what you think about March.
Yeah, I agree. Well, obviously, the NASCAR has kicked off, and golf has kicked off, and so you have some of the, you know, maybe not at the forefront of the sports leagues, you know, but they are starting their seasons, and so that's just kind of getting underway. So that's something that's available to you on television and in the news feeds and stuff. And then some other stuff like college basketball moves to the forefront at this time of year. That's what has garnered the majority of my attention over the last couple weeks.
Hey, speaking of NASCAR, I don't know if you saw this or not, and I don't even know the guy's name, but it was like maybe a week or two ago in one of their series, a driver was so frustrated with whatever was going on in the race. He just parked his car at the start-finish line and got out and walked back to the pits. Do you hear about that?
I didn't. No, I can't. I didn't hear about that. I don't think that was in NASCAR. So
it was. Talking, you do a web search and look it up, man.
All right.
I can't remember his name, but he had gotten a couple of violations during the race or something, and he literally just parked his car at the start-finish line. I think they told him he was done. So he parked his car at the start-finish line and just walked away. I think I saw a headline today that he was suspended for one race after that.
I'll have to do some more searching. I'm not the greatest researcher, man. I'm not seeing it like coming up straight away, so I'll have to do a suite of homework assignment. Awesome. That's my favorite thing about this podcast. So,
well, hopefully I'm not making it up, although it's worth a fake news podcast, but I'm pretty positive it was like one of the, not the main NASCAR event, but series, but one of them.
Oh, like during the Xfinity or one
something.
Of
it was like.
Oh,
was,
okay.
Anyway, we'll start the podcast off on a little bit of a side, I guess. But you just mentioned NASCAR, and that came to my mind just because made me think about just kind of unique things that happen in sports, and that was pretty unique.
Yeah, Josh Williams suspended for one race. It was Xfinity Series, so basically like the JV.
Yeah,
it's pretty funny, dude. He said, "That's it. I've had enough." I'll see you guys next week. And then NASCAR says, "Nah, how about the week after that?"
You know, speaking of kind of unique moments in sports, from your part of the country, we had really, I've been a bit of a baseball fan since I was a kid. Some people would say more than a bit of a fan, but really Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout facing each other. And really the scenario that a kid, you do that in the backyard from the time you're about five or six to finish off the World Baseball Classic last night.
Yeah, classic matchup, man, of two of the best players on the planet. And, you know, Ohtani got the better of him. And, yeah, by all accounts, you know, I've heard various people with various views with regards to the World Baseball Classic, but I personally love it. I love the setup. I love, you know, it's quick, right? And the games matter. And, you know, I like it when people are playing for their country. And that's why I like the Olympics. And I'm not a huge soccer fan, but I love the World Cup. And I'll follow that very, very closely when that's going on and things like that. So, yeah, I mean, you know, you get Ohtani versus Trout with two outs in the ninth, down by one. I mean, you can't set it up much better than that.
You know, I love the World Baseball Classic. I was reading some stories today saying TV ratings were really up for it this year. And I think, you know, anytime you have a format like that, it works really well. And there's always the good stories and the drama. One question I have is, how can you say enough about Ohtani? He's like everything, and Trout's been an amazing ball player for his whole career. The thing I wonder about is for both of them this year, is that the only championship game they're going to play in? And if it is, that's really unfortunate for the sport.
Yeah, I think it is probably the only championship that they're going to play in. For Trout, for sure. I mean, Ohtani, maybe he gets moved, but it's unfortunate, man, that a generational talent like Mike Trout can go his entire career and really never be showcased on the game's highest stage. And, it's not like the Angels didn't try, at various points to spend some money and build a roster around him. But, either they didn't try hard enough or things didn't go their way. But, yeah, I think he's going to be one of those guys that, it would have been nice to see what that guy could have done when the lights were the brightest, and obviously he's been arguably the best player in baseball since he came in the league. And on a year-by-year basis, there might be a guy or two who, have a little better stats than him, but the guy's been just nothing but consistent throughout. And, it would have been nice to see what he could do, in the playoffs.
I think the challenging thing, as we talked a little bit off air, is in a sport like baseball. Yeah, money matters to some degree, as we've seen. I mean, you can clearly put a bigger, better team on the field, but someone's probably done a more detailed analysis. But in baseball in particular, it is probably the sport where one player can make the least difference. And I know they've got some stat more than one, but about for every player wins against expected, or pick any three-letter combination, and they probably have a baseball stat for it. But for me, it's like, and I'm going to steal what you said off air, but notice I give you credit because that's just how I roll. Jordan could shoot the ball whenever he wanted. It's not like Mike Trout gets to go up to the bat rack and say, hey, I'll take over for you right now. I mean, you come up in your turn in rotation, if you're lucky, four times a game.
Yeah, and that's just it, man. I mean, you talk about, golf or NASCAR, NBA, obviously like tennis, golf. Race car driving, those are individual sports, and obviously like one player has a big impact on how things turn out because it's an individual sport. And then once you move into even I would include hockey in there, if you have the best player on the ice, or especially in basketball, if you have the best player on the court on your team, keeps you in the game at a minimum, and it probably gives you a high likelihood of winning, because offense consists of you know, one dude in the end taking a shot. And, you know, you can get offensive rebounds and try again. And, you know, there's obviously schematic things that go into it to free up space and blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, like you said, Michael Jordan could get the ball at some point during his team's possession. And Michael Jordan, you know, while the other guys are doing things and helping out and trying to free up space, and Kerr made plenty of three-pointers and, you know, other guys contributed. But, man, Michael Jordan can take the shot every time. And in baseball, you know, you're not going to field the ball. You could be the best fielder in baseball, but that doesn't mean you're going to get the ball all the time. And, you know, you could be the best hitter in baseball. And like you said, man, you're going to still only – you got to wait for eight other dudes who maybe aren't very good at their job to go, and then you get one shot at it again. And, you know, and then when you couple that with – intentional walks and game scenarios, and they can even steal that a bat from you, where you know, you basically, your hands are tied and you can't do anything with your turn. And so it makes it tough, man. I mean, I think Trout, like I said, I think he's been the best player in baseball overall over the span of his time. You know, it's just not enough for the team to have success necessarily.
Well, Chris, you talked about something else about here, and it is March, and I guess if we had a big name podcast, now would be the time that we'd cue that famous music that we hear every year this time, and the games matter, and it's a quick format. It's March, and that means it's March Madness. Again, we don't have the music. Got to work on that budget for the show, but it is March Madness, and What a first round we just had.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it didn't fail to deliver, man. I mean, straight out the gate, I think it was maybe second or third game to finish. Furman knocked off Virginia, and March Madness was well on its way. And I know, you know, you and your brother and one of our coworkers, we did a draft. You know, we got a little text thread that we're chatting with each other in, and you know, down goes Virginia, you know, four seed right away. And then I think I text a little bit later, I think it was the same day, where it was like, you know, I think it was, was it the Princeton game against, or no, it was the Purdue game. And it was like, hey, you know, Furman, hold my beer. And down goes the number one seed for the second time in history.
If there's anybody that's happier to see that happen than Virginia, I'm not sure who it would be, because it takes all the headlines off of them being the first to lose to a 16 seed and their exit from the tournament.
Yeah,
this year
they just got a free pass out of there with like no questions asked. Because there was a couple of them, man. I mean, Arizona going down straight away, and you know, I mean, hell, Princeton's still alive, so. You know, it hasn't disappointed, man. I've been glued. I've watched pieces of just about every game, some games in their entirety throughout, and been following it closely. And yeah, it's just a fun time of year, man. I mean, the format does not get better than this, dude. It's one and done, and you know, it's just a cool setup, because in any sporting event, we all know, man, anything can happen, right? So anyone can beat anyone. I don't care if you're talking about a fight, you know, be it boxing, you know, Buster Douglas beat Mike Tyson, you know, 48-1 underdog, and he beat him. And there's been plenty of epic upsets in sports history where we know that a team that probably would lose 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10, I mean, hell, the U.S. hockey team, you know, beating the Russians in Lake Placid, and you never know. And so March sets us up, you know, straight out the gate with 32 chances for that. And then they just keep going, man. And it's round after round of, you just don't know, right? That they're going to play the game on the court. And the setup that March Madness has for its national champion is the absolute best in sports.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, especially those first 2 days. I mean, you got really wall-to-wall basketball, no matter what time zone you're in here in the U.S., you can turn it on, and there's always some compelling action. And then you've got the stories of, you know, something, whether, you know, it's the buzzer beater or it's the small school taking on big guy, the coach that, you know, making hardly nothing, and the multimillionaire, and just everything else going on. And we see it every year. I mean, I, you know, what are the last three or four, 4 or 5 years, you know, for things, something in my life I never thought I'd see happen, to be honest. Or it was about as close to the things they say that are a given, which is death and taxes, a number one seed losing to a 16. And it's happened twice in whatever it is, past 4 or 5 years. And I love those stories. You know, and then we come to Saturday and Sunday, and sometimes the fairy tale continues, and sometimes it comes to a short end. And that's, I think, the beauty of the whole format.
Yeah, agreed, man. And you know, it was kind of funny. So I had my girlfriend Angie fill out a bracket, and she's not a big sports fan, right? And I was like, that's perfect. You're exactly who wins these things. And so, but when we were filling out the bracket, I wasn't going to lead the witness in any way, right? I was just going to let her fill it out. But I did do this. I said, listen, I'm just going to move all the ones and twos to the next round, and then you pick the rest of the games for the first round and then all the games going forward. But, you know, in the history of this tournament, a 16 has beat a 1 one time ever. So let's just move all the ones forward. And the 15s that have moved on is, you know, less than 10, right? So let's just move all of them forward. Well, then as you know, as we're going through the first round, I'm like, man, I should have just let her pick the whole bracket, you know, because, you know, she might have had the Princeton win mixed in there, you know, for all I know. So,
you know, what's really funny there, too, man, you always see this headline comes out, too. I don't know how many it is. Millions of brackets are submitted online, and speaking of that, submitting online, I do want to pause and give a shout out to a gentleman that's been making accessible NC brackets for 17 years, who retired from the business this year, Terrell Thompson. Shout out to him for all his great work on accessible NC brackets, and he kind of handed it off to Yahoo. They've made some steps forward on accessible brackets, and so that's really always been his goal. So just a big shout out there. But what I was thinking about, I always find funny, is of these millions of brackets that are submitted, you know, at some point you get the headline coming up. There are zero brackets with left with everything right. And it's amazing, you know, how quickly it happens each year, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, dude. You know, to even, you know, we all know the upsets are going to happen. And the problem is we don't know where it's going to be. And that's the beauty. That's the beauty, man. That's what makes it amazing is, you know, like I said, if Arizona played Princeton, you know, maybe if they played them 20 times, Arizona might win 19 of them, you know, and but not today. And you never know where that's going to take place or which team it's going to be that, you know, and then when they find a run, I mean, there's only one double digit seed left. And this is usually how it goes. You know, day one and two is, you know, about the underdogs, right? Because, you know, the field is stacked in such a manner that obviously there's some competitive games. The 8 and the 9, the 7 and the 10, you know, are always very competitive games. The 6 and 11, also very competitive. But once you start getting further and further away, I mean, you're talking about pitting the best teams in the country against the teams that barely made it, right? Or got an automatic bid from their little league. And you know, you wouldn't expect too often for those teams to be able to beat the best teams in all of basketball. But it happens, and that's what makes day one and day two so exciting, because you know it's going to happen, but you don't know where. But then generally speaking, the way these things end up going is the cream almost always rises. And we'll see, man, how far, you know, there's been some runs. You know, Gonzaga had a really nice one. I mean, that was a long time ago now. I mean, now I think they're basically a blue blood at this point, but they weren't before. And you know, every once in a while you get a team to kind of come out of nowhere and run all the way, you know, into the Final Four. So we'll see if a couple of these teams that maybe weren't expected can keep their streak alive in this tournament.
Let's dive in just a little bit. We don't need to go through all the games, but can you pull up the you know, the Sweet 16 and let's just run through the teams that are left in each bracket, and if you got a short thought on who's going to come out of each bracket there for the final four, maybe we can start in the South and tell us the games that are coming up on Thursday, Friday there.
So in the South, you got Alabama, the one seed, against the five seed San Diego State University. And, you know, Alabama's the favorite to win the whole thing at this point. But, you know, it's close, man. I mean, Houston's a really good team. UCLA, a little banged up. They got an ankle that's in question right now, so we'll see. But overall, I think most people consider Alabama the most complete team. They're the one seed taking on a real gritty, tough. I was joking with a buddy. I was talking with him. I swear they, like, teleport into position. Like, you know, a team makes a pass. It looks like the guy's wide open, and by the time he catches the ball and gets into a shooting position, which is like, you know, less than a second a lot of times, it's like there's a guy right in his face, and it's like, I don't know how these guys are flying around all over the place, but they play some pretty gnarly, stingy defense. So those two teams will face off, and then Creighton and the last true Cinderella left, Princeton, are the other team.
That's a 9 and a 15, isn't it?
It's a six and a 15. Six. Princeton's a 15, and I from my perspective, I mean, Alabama's the class. They should beat San Diego State, and then likely will play Creighton, who I think's like a six. Oh no, I'm sorry. Creighton's like a 10-point favorite over Princeton, and I would have Alabama coming out of that. I mean, they just, you know, they've looked the part.
I don't see any change. I mean, this is again. Stories sometimes come to an end, and I don't see anybody coming out of this division ahead of Alabama right now anyway.
Yeah, and so then we'd go to the East from there, and that would be the 9-seed FAU against the 4-seed Tennessee in the first game, and then Kansas State and Michigan State. So I think Tennessee's favored by like 4-ish or something, 5. And the K-State, Michigan State game has got to be close to a pick 'em. I'm trying to find it right now. 1.5. They got Michigan State favored by 1.5.
You know, I'm going to say that Michigan State has as good a chance as anybody to come out of that bracket. Somehow they just shine a little bit brighter in March, and if there's a bracket where that can happen, I think it's that one.
Yeah, I mean, you know, all four of these teams are very evenly matched. I actually have, I was talking with a different buddy that's big into college basketball, and he liked Michigan State to win that game just for basically Izzo was the difference in his mind. But I actually feel like K-State, they're just cooking, man. I mean, you're watching them play, and they're just so loose, man. And the kid Noel's, doing behind-the-back passes. He's driving down the lane and bouncing the ball between his legs to trailers, and they're dunking. And they just look like they're having fun, man. And they're just so loose and confident. And they just have something about them that just looks kind of special to me. So I know Michigan State's a slight favorite. I mean, this game could go either way, but I just feel like K-State's got something going on, man. They just seem like they're just having fun out there playing. So we'll see. It'll be an interesting game. See what prevails. I mean, the steady Eddie, the guys who are always there. I mean, it seems like all Michigan State ever does is kind of meander through the regular season and then make a Final Four. Izzo's made a whole career of this, so it wouldn't surprise me at all if they continue to advance. But I feel like K-State, man, just got something special going.
Could be. Well, let's jump up to the next division.
So Midwest has the 1-seed Houston playing the 5-seed Miami. And, it's really going to come down to Sasser in that one. You know, the last game, he went in, he played. He looked great, from what I could see, but you know, he's one of the better players in the country, and makes a big difference on a game, and he's been banged up for a couple weeks now, and they said he was at about 60%. Boy, I mean, that guy's scary at 100 then, because He looked pretty decent just, you know, with what he had to offer in that game. So Miami's got their work cut out for him, I think. That one is a 7-point spread Houston's favored by, which makes you feel good. That's your squad. I know you drafted them first overall.
I need Houston in the worst way. As you mentioned, we've got a little pool going on, and four guys all drafted teams. I'm in last place right now. But I really need some stuff to happen. But I need Houston to come through for me.
Yeah, I mean, you got a few shots at it, man. I mean, I kind of gave a little update to the four members of our league, I'm really happy the way it's shaken up. So, you know, we drafted 16 teams. You got a point based on the seed of your team. So every time an 11 seed wins, they get 11 points. And every time a 1 seed wins, they get 1 point. But to make up the difference, obviously it makes it sound like the lower seeds are better, which in the early rounds it is. But there are also bonus points for making the Sweet 16 and making the Elite 8 and making the Final Four and the championship game and so on. And those bonus points continue to increase. And so you really want to have a shot at winning the national championship. And the way things shook up, you're the only one in the group who has a team left in three of the four regions. So, you know, if everything ran perfect, you could have three of the four final four teams. Nobody else can have more than two. So it does give you several shots at it. But Houston's for sure you're most likely to win the national championship probably.
Just so our listeners know a little, give you a glimpse behind the curtain. This is kind of how stuff goes with Chris. A couple days before some big event, hey, Kelly, you want to get in? Are you in? Oh, okay. You're in? Great. Hey, here's the rules. Okay, great. Then the thing starts. Oh, here's the first day standings. Chris, up by at least 50% on anybody else. Hey, aren't we glad he's the scorekeeper and the rule maker?
Hey, so power of the pen, baby. The pen is mightier than the sword, Kelly. Everyone knows that. So, no, I mean, the score is legit. I mean, you know, the numbers all add up. You guys just let me have Alabama. So for the record, we had an off-air, basically like a random draw to determine the picks. But we set it up a little different. So, you know, the first name pulled out of the hat, essentially, didn't necessarily get the first pick. That person got to pick where they wanted to pick. So as things go, I had the first selection. And in fairness to my fellow competitors, I chose number 3. Instead of taking the first overall pick, I left it available. I didn't even take the second overall pick. I left that available. And I just felt like 3 was lucky. I didn't even know why exactly. But I felt like 3 was a lucky number. And lo and behold, Houston went first. And then we had a wild card with the second pick. David took Arizona with his first pick overall, and Alabama just fell right into my lap at number 3.
And once again, we know my day job is not software or sports prognostication. It's something to do with software, because that second pick of taking Houston went to me. And right now, of the four people in the tournament, I am in not first place, not second, not even third. But I am last. We'll see what happens over this weekend, though.
You're top 5, buddy. That's not bad. You know, a lot of NASCAR drivers can make the playoffs just getting nothing but top 5. So,
well, there you go.
So the second game in that one, let's get back on track. Second game, this one's a good one. With the way Xavier's playing right now and then the way Texas has been playing for really going on the last month, Xavier and Texas, the 2 versus the 3, which should be a pretty tight one. They got Texas favored by 4. This one should be interesting. So I actually like Texas beyond the fact that that was my second-round pick in our draft. I started Alabama-Texas with my first two picks. Besides the rooting interest I have for my money, Texas is just a really solid club. Plays, I think they're top 20 in offense, top 10 in defense. They just don't beat themselves. And, you know, I think Texas should win this game.
Well, that's funny. Another funny story, right? I'm about the stories. in our draft, I don't know if you remember this, Chris, I do because of how it played out. I also took Marquette, and another gentleman in our draft took Xavier, and I gave him grief.
Yeah.
Because of how Marquette had kind of really handled them in their conference championship game. And I'm like, oh, they got a guy that's hurt a little bit. And no, you can't believe you took him. And, you know, like I said.
No, you did. You gave him some crap. And, you know, he responded with, hey, man, this isn't what I do professionally. And, you know, sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. You know, because Marquette did. I mean, I think they beat him by 20 in the championship game. And, you know, Xavier came in. I mean, now, they did make it to their championship game, so that says something in itself. But, you know, you hate to enter the national championship tournament, you know, coming off of a bad beat like that. But, you know, lo and behold, Marquette's out, and Xavier's still alive.
Yeah, that's what I love about the tournament. So, you know, I'm gonna why not? I'll keep going with them. Xavier's gonna come out of that bracket.
Oh, you're taking them to beat your Houston team. All right, well, first they got to beat my Texas team. Then they
why
gotta,
not? Let's live it up a little.
Gonna take Texas to win that game, and then I'm gonna be at that point. I'm just gonna be hopeful Texas can win the next one against whether it's Miami or Houston. I'm just hoping that they win the next one. Because then that would really give me a stranglehold. I'd have a really good spot if Texas can somehow make the Final Four. So that's
I'll
what
go with
for.
Xavier. Why not? In for a penny, in for a pound. If I was wrong, hey, at least I can be the best at being wrong.
So moving down, last region is the West, and you got the number 8 seed Arkansas up against the 4 seed UConn. And this is an interesting one. So UConn's been playing really good basketball for, you know, down the whole stretch, right? They've looked really good. They've come on. It's kind of similar to Texas, man. Over the last, like, you know, 3 weeks to a month or whatever, they've been playing excellent basketball and have continued to do so in the tournament. They had to come from behind last game. But Arkansas is I hadn't watched them, you know, throughout the season and wasn't really familiar. From what I understand, they've had some injuries they've dealt with over the course of the year, but their team's, you know, pretty much at full strength at this point. And that is a team, man, they are relentless. They kind of remind me a little bit of the San Diego State squad, where it's just they just keep coming at you, man. And the guys are flying all over the place. So, you know, Princeton, San Diego State, and Arkansas would be my gold, silver, and bronze for effort so far of the teams that remain. You know, they just play so hard from start to finish. And so UConn's got their work cut out for them in that game. I think I still stick with UConn, but I don't know, man, with the effort Arkansas is putting in, like, it's going to be a tough game.
I can't really add to that analysis. I know I won't claim I had followed Arkansas the whole season, but I did actually sit down when I was looking at some of this, and they were one of the teams I thought was really strong and could go further in the tournament than maybe their initial seed predicted. But, you know, I do think UConn's going to come out of that.
Yeah, and then the last game would be Gonzaga and UCLA, the 2 versus the 3 there. And that one's a coin flip. I don't know what the line is. It's got to be like 2 or less. 1.5, UCLA minus 1.5. So that one could go either way. I mean, props to Timmy. He has absolutely put that Gonzaga team on his back. It's not the most talented Gonzaga team that they've had in a while. You can see, I mean, Timmy's, you know, it reminds me a little bit of the Joker in Denver. You know, it's just like this dude's got to do everything. He's got to do all the passing, all the rebounding, all the scoring. And, you know, I mean, I know there's four other guys on the court, but everything goes through this one guy. And, you know, I mean, we'll see. Maybe he can do it again. I mean, he wants it, man. I mean, he's given it everything he has. And, you know, Gonzaga is a good, you know, good program with, at this point, a pretty storied history, you know, at least over the last 20 years. And, you know, they're gonna give it all they got. I mean, UCLA, they lost their best defensive player heading in, and then, you know, now they sustained another injury. And so, They're a little banged up, but they do still have quite a bit of firepower. It's still UCLA, still one of the premier programs in college basketball history. And so, we'll see if tradition and grit can get them through to another Final Four. This one is the closest of all of them. So I could see any of the – well, this one and the East. So FAU, Tennessee, Kansas State, and Michigan State. Those four teams are so close to each other. And then this one in the West, Arkansas, UConn, Gonzaga, and UCLA, it's just going to be brutal matchups. They're so evenly matched. Who do you like coming out of the West, bud, of the four I just listed?
This is always one of the tough ones here. Gonzaga is really an interesting story because, they did go from the Cinderella to, as they say, a blue blood and blue blood over the course of the last, 20 years. And yet they always seem to stub their toe someplace along the way. And UCLA is, some of it's just that storied tradition. But at least for me, when I think of college basketball, it's even if they haven't been up there all the time, UCLA is just one of those names, obviously, because of John Wooden and much more. But they've had so much that, they're just hurting. And, when we started this one out, we talked about how basketball is where one of those sports where one person can take it over. And Timmy's really. From the beginning of the year, he's been on a mission with this team. So I'm going to put Gonzaga back into the Final Four.
Yeah, I can't blame you for that pick at all, man. I mean, like I said, any one of these four teams wouldn't surprise me. I just don't know. It feels like UConn is probably the most balanced team. So they play offense, they play defense, they can run, eight or nine guys at you, they maybe don't have the single star power. But I think I'm going to go with UConn out of the West. We'll see. So my Final Four is Alabama. I'm going to take K-State to go all the way. So I'm going to take Alabama, K-State, UConn, and Texas. You got Alabama, Michigan State, Gonzaga, and Xavier.
Book it, baby.
All right. It's on wax, buddy. Can't take it back now.
We'll see how it goes.
We'll get a chance to catch up.
We'll catch up.
After some of these games, they're going to start tomorrow. So they'll get through the weekend, and then you and I can catch up again and see where we're at after the next round of games.
Chris, you said there when you're talking about a couple of these games, you said, I just don't know. Right about now, I feel like saying that about the Las Vegas Raiders, because I just don't know what they're doing. And then they swap out Derek Carr for Jimmy Garoppolo. I really just don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, in my opinion, I don't think they got better. So. I don't think that Garoppolo is a better NFL quarterback than Carr. And historically, Carr, short of a broken leg, which knocked him off when he was basically having an MVP or close to it caliber season. He broke his leg right before they hit in the playoffs, and that derailed that season. But other than that, Carr's been on the field all the time. Garoppolo has not. So even when you line him up side by side, I don't know that Garoppolo's even better than Carr, from go. And then when you couple in the availability problem, I just don't think they got better at the position. That's my opinion. I mean, we'll see. I could be wrong. Obviously, the Raiders think I am. But, I don't know, man. I mean, I guess I'm just not a big Jimmy G fan. And I haven't always been right about that stuff. I wasn't a big Jalen Hurts fan. I didn't think the guy could throw the football very well. And I know he could run it, and I know he's a good team leader, and I know he's got some of the intangibles that you want from a leadership position. But I didn't think he could throw the football very well. And this past year, he could prove me wrong. I mean, he got an A-plus wide receiver and an A-minus wide receiver on the same team, and then an A tight end to throw it to, and he did just fine with it. So. A couple of my other buddies, you know, they're a little higher on Garoppolo than I am. So, you know, time will tell, man. But I don't know that they got better.
I mean, I think that it's really interesting. You know, Garoppolo's got all the things I heard coming out of San Francisco is that the players love playing for him and with him. You know, he's a good dude, put up with all the off-season last year stuff. So it's not that he's a bad quarterback, but there is that availability thing at some point, and like he's had that track record, and you know you can't knock. I'm not knocking him. I mean it's a violent sport, but I just wonder. Like, so a year ago, you know, we were supposed to have the buddies back together with Derek Carr and Davante Adams. And, you know, Devontae's like, hey, I want to set records and all this other stuff. And, like, that whole party only lasted a year. I don't see it. But, I mean, you know, I don't have the title of GM after my name either. So,
well, you and I talked, you know, when the season came to an end, you know, a lot of this was going to be the interesting offseason with regards to the quarterback position. So, you know, Derek Carr ended up going to the Saints, which I think is a great fit for all parties. I think he's happy. They're happy. They have stability at the position. They have the Saints have a talented roster. They still, I mean, they're getting older and they're not maybe quite what they once were, but they have a very solid defense. They still have, again, a little bit older, but, you know, one of the premier running backs in football. And, you know, they added Olave and you know, they got a good team. And the South is weak, so, you know, it's a winnable division. You know, Garoppolo went to the Raiders, and the big one that we're waiting on is the Aaron Rodgers, and you know, the Jets are, well, we're sort of waiting on two, so Lamar Jackson's still out there too, but, you know, we'll see. He's going to land somewhere, right? So, and it's most likely probably going to be Baltimore, but the Rodgers one is the bizarre one to me, and you and I both being Packer fans, you know, I know you and I are both just kind of, let's just be done with this, man. I'm pretty fed up with it, you know. I know we're moving on, you know, but it's not, we're missing the closure, you know, that we need, I think.
Yeah, it's really just odd, and you know, a lot of this whole with a lot of these quarterbacks and the movement and the salaries, and then the Rodgers and even the other stuff. I feel like it's a bunch of guys sitting around, like going all in on Texas Hold'em, dude. where, boy, I mean, you're paying the quarterback so much. And then you're looking for that winning thing. And here we got the Jets and the Packers both, I think, trying to bluff each other a little about who, like, everybody knows. And in this case, it's pretty much like you can guess what everybody's holding. But it's like, who's going to, you know, take the next step? Is it, you know, some people say the Packers have the leverage, others, you know, the Jets. And it's just, let's just be done with it. And okay, this is what's going on.
Well, I read a really good article that I loved, and I wish I could give credit where it was due. So I apologize to the author if you know, if he's listening or she's listening, because I don't remember the name. But you know, it made a lot of sense to me. The solution, you know, with conditional picks makes a lot of sense, and that can just get this deal done. So there's some stuff I don't understand. I know June 1st is a big date where, you know, it's kind of in the Packers' best interest to wait, where if they can wait till after June 1st, then the cap hit that they're going to suffer can be divided amongst 2 years, as opposed to taking the whole $40 million cap hit this year if they trade him before June 1st. You know, there's some components to this, you know, with capology that I don't understand. But basically, to paraphrase the article, it was saying, hey, you know, give them a second and a fourth conditional for Rodgers, and just be done with this. And the conditions would consist something to the effect like, hey, so we're going to get a second round pick from you no matter what, and a fourth round pick from the Jets no matter what. But if the Jets make the playoffs next year and Rodgers plays 50% of the snaps as the starting quarterback for the Jets, then that second round pick becomes a first round pick in 2024. And the fourth round pick would be, you know, if Rodgers retires or doesn't play or whatever, then we still get a fourth. But if you guys make the playoffs in 2024, and then that would move to a third round pick. If you guys make the Super Bowl, it would move to a second round pick. And if you win the Super Bowl, it would be a first round pick. So if Rodgers plays 2 years for the Jets, and in the course of those 2 years, the Jets win a Super Bowl, the Packers would get two first round picks. And I think the Jets would all be happy for that. You know what I mean? I think they would pay. If they knew they were going to win a Super Bowl, they would give the two first round picks up, like, without question, right? And the Packers would be happy with their compensation and all of that. And to me, it just made a lot of sense. Like, hey, man, we know we don't know. We know that you don't know what you're going to get out of Rodgers. You're going to have to deal with this crap next year. So next year after the season ends, whatever happens, you know, whether he wins the Super Bowl or you guys don't even make the playoffs, Rodgers is going to drag you through this crap. And, you know, he's got to go to his darkness retreat and take his drugs and find himself again. And you're going to have to deal with all this crap. And, you know, so we know that makes you nervous. But the fact is, you're getting an all-time great quarterback and a guy who instantly makes you a Super Bowl contender. And, you know, that has some value, dude. So we want some compensation because we're giving it up. So I agree with you, though, Kelly, man. I just be done with it, man. I mean, you know he ain't playing for the Packers ever again. So I just think for all parties, it'd be nice to just put this thing to bed, you know, soon as they can.
Which, hey, I've really, as a Packer fan, appreciated what Aaron Rodgers has done. I mean, he's made the games entertaining and all of that. And it's just rare for any player to, you know, finish their career in one spot. Everybody's got different things going on. As far as that goes, the one thing that I find most ironic about all of this is, if I go back to some of our first podcasts, Chris, we had a similar conversation, not necessarily even about the Packers, but about different teams. And, you know, would you make that deal to get the 1 year Super Bowl but then you don't, like, you're going to go back. We had this with the Rams and getting Matthew Stafford and how they kind of sold the farm for their Super Bowl win, and we saw it play out. I mean, they next year had, the worst record of any team after a Super Bowl victory. So, again, it's this high-stakes thing of what are you going for. And the Super Bowl is elusive. Well, you know, I've said this before, too. Even if you just did a rotation of every team, you're only getting there for each division once every 16 years, you know, let alone winning it. If that's what had to become the reality, you know, it's once every 32, and that's not how it works. So you really are trying to get ahead of everybody else. And it's just always an interesting dynamic. And, you know, I guess the sports media and the NFL loves it because it keeps people talking about their business all year long. And one person that's really going to benefit from that coming up pretty quick here is Roger Goodell, because, you know, you read these other articles about how the compensation committee is working out his next deal. And, I mean, you know, they're just printing money right and left from every kind of crazy TV deal. Unlike baseball, which I don't know how much you follow the business of all this, where the broadcast things, the networks that carry half the teams, that company just declared bankruptcy.
NFL is king, has been king, and will continue to be for, you know, at least the near future. You know, I mean, the various leagues have their, you know, core audience and the people who support them in and out, but nobody has the audience like the NFL does. I mean, they are just, you know, here in the United States of America, man, as far as our sports are concerned, the NFL's in charge, and they dominate, man. I mean, it's just, you know, we love football, you know, American football here in America, man. It's just the biggest boy on the block, man, and that's not changing anytime soon. And so with that comes all the money.
You know, speaking of King, a little foreshadowing of what's going to come up on a future episode of the podcast to be named later. I'm not sure if he played this game, but I know off air Chris was telling me about how he probably played pretty much every other game, including chasing $5,000 around in a wind tunnel. You're going to have Chris tell us about how he played all kinds of games not too long ago in a little competition. That's a fun story that we'll get into probably in the next episode.
Yeah, it was a pretty fun day. I told you some of this story already, you know, off air, you and I chatted, and it was a pretty fun day, man. So, yeah, if you want to dive into it sometime, I could kind of walk you through what the days consisted of on another show.
Well, Chris, we got a lot happening. Going to be the final four, the Sweet 16 kicking off. Baseball, got my tickets. It's funny, I've been to 5 opening day games for the Seattle Mariners in my life. It was like 5 in a row. I've never been to an opening day for the Brewers. Changing that up this year. Got my tickets for April 3rd. Looking forward to that. Get back at the ballpark.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, you kind of made mention to it. You know, it's a really cool time of year right now where – you know, a couple of things are just starting out, and then we're winding down. I mean, the NBA playoff picture it's crazy. I'd have to pull up the standings, but I want to say it's like 4 games that separate, like, the – are you getting a home game and hosting, or are you, like, not even in the playoffs? And so that's all winding down, so the next couple of weeks will be really exciting. Most of the teams have around 10 games left in that one. NHL's going to be winding down, and then you have a couple, like, baseball's just picking up. So, you know, right now, baseball's a little bit different, but you know, everyone has hope. You know, if this pitcher works out and this guy, you know, comes back healthy, and you know, there's going to be a couple of teams that you didn't expect to be in the playoffs that are making a run. And somehow, you know, they've just put Kansas City Royals were that team a lot of times, you know, in the past, where it was like, man, they were never supposed to be good. But, you know, every once in a while, man, they found their way, you know. And there'll be a couple of teams that weren't expected, but you don't know which city that's going to be. You don't know which team that's going to be. And so, you know,
well,
right
and
now.
For a while, you're out in your state, the Oakland Athletics for that team, you know, Billy Ball and all the rest. But I guess eventually the rats and the sewage in the locker room ended even any chance for that team. But they've been the great example of that, you know, finding the really talented players and making great runs. But and then the players go somewhere else and get more money.
Yeah, and so, you know, it's just exciting, though. You know, and a month from now, there'll be some cities that are already realized, like, oh, man, oh, no, we suck again. but there'll be a couple that are like, hey, we're pretty good. Look at us, you know. And so as it stands right now until April 3rd, you know, everybody who roots for a team, you know, has some hope.
You know, it's for me, I enjoy baseball. I won't say as I'm a big fan as I used to be, but it's – you know, growing up and spending good part of my life in Wisconsin, baseball's always meant the warmer weather's here or soon going to be here. It's just kind of that backdrop to life throughout the summer because there's just always something on a game here or there. And been pretty much my whole life, one of the Brewers announcers been, you know, Mr. Baseball, Bob Uecker, still going strong at whatever it is, 88 or 89. And it's just... yeah, you'd love to have your team climb a little bit up the mountain. The Brewers have had some runs here in the playoffs of late. But, you know, again, sports is an escape or just a ease from the everyday realities. And baseball is for me the ultimate of that, and it's just the backdrop. You know, it's got it on, and oh yeah, and you know what? No matter what happens, more so than any other sport, there's always another game tomorrow.
Yeah, and for me, that's actually part of the problem. So, while the beginning of baseball, you know, like I said, it's exciting and it's a new season and all of that, but it's really the tail end of baseball. So, when baseball comes to its conclusion, the NFL has just been getting going. You know what I mean? It's usually, you know, 4 weeks in or something like that, and you know, now we're starting the playoffs for baseball, and that's the scene. When okay, now fall's arrived, right? And football's on TV. All our fantasy drafts are done. All our teams are set, and the NFL's off and running. And then here comes baseball, you know, into their playoffs and stuff. And that's the one where it really hits you, like, hey, it's about to get cold around here. The problem though for me is exactly that. It's like it's a backdrop. It's always on. There's always a game, and it's just, you know, we talked about how exciting March Madness is, and how it's the pinnacle of the way a championship is decided. Man, there's nothing more exciting than the way the college basketball championship is decided, because it's all these one and done games. You know, it's everything is on the line every time they play. Football's set up similarly. You know, everything is it's a one game playoff as well. But baseball is so long, man, and it's just like each individual game matters nothing to the season. You know, months don't barely even matter, man. And so it's just hard. It's just hard, man. When you play 162 games, it's just, you know, it's hard to put too much emphasis on any one of them.
Hopefully, we'll see how it shakes out, and we'll talk about it another time. But hopefully some of the rule changes with the pitch clock and all that change it a little bit. It's still going to be 162 games, but at least it's not going to be 162 games with dudes, adjusting their batting gloves 30 times a game. So we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see, man. I mean, in spring ball, it shaved I think it was about 30 minutes off. So
the few spring games I've watched or listened to, it's not just even the time. It's there's something happening. I mean, you know, there's action.
Yeah.
Instead of, oh, you know, steps up to the plate. Oh, he stepped out. Oh, you know, I mean, it's just let's do it. Speaking of conclusions and stepping up and stepping out. I think we're about at that time, Chris. Really great to have you back. I'm glad you're still with us and nobody else could tempt you away in free agency.
Yeah, I can't quit you, baby. No, man, I'm happy to be back. And I said, man, hopefully schedules can line up and I can be there for all of them. I enjoy the conversations. Obviously, you know, sports is something that I'm really into in my life, but some of the conversations that happen on this podcast are just really intriguing, man, and eye-opening for some of the other, you know, aspects to life that maybe I don't think about on a regular basis.
Well, all right, everyone. Thanks again for listening to another edition of the podcast to be named later. And, Chris, have a great week.
Thanks, Kelly.